You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think.
Welcome to the future.
Let's be honest, none can bomb us. When we drop knowledge, kicking tails to astonish. Tails to astonish. Tails to astonish.
Yeah, that's right, folks. It's Think Theory Radio, weird science and tales to astonish, 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 astonish. And I am your metaphysical guide on this crazy audio ride, Damian Perdue. And I'm joined by Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
And it's been a long time since we've delved into the CPT files of weirdness.
Uh-oh.
I have compiled a massive myriad of articles of strange things happening in our universe.
We have the documents.
We got them. Unlock the files from the secret government labs.
And, you know, if 2020 wasn't weird enough, I have so many weird stuff going on in the universe and on the planet. I don't even know where to begin, Paul.
Oh, gosh. Let's start on the planet. Let's start from the ground and work our way up.
All right. We're staying on Earth. All right. So I'm going to put these over here. All right. Let's get this one out of the way. How would you like to just have music beamed into your head, Paul?
Oh, I'd love that.
Well, you're in luck. Because a futuristic device from Israeli firm puts music in your head without headphones. This is from timesofisrael.com.
Now, is there any, like, Bluetooth interference or any sort of, like, cell signal interference? I mean, because that's always the frustrating thing is when you're trying to listen to something and it just blips out.
Well, let's find out. This is a new technology called sound beaming. And it's a futuristic audio tech from Novito Systems, an Israeli company. And this just recently debuted a desktop device that beams sound directly to a listener without the need for headphones. And they actually provided the Associated Press with an exclusive demo of this. The listening sensation is straight out of a sci-fi movie. The 3D sound is so close, it feels like it's inside your ears while also in front, above, and behind them. Novetta expects the device will have plenty of practical uses, from allowing office workers to listen to music or conference calls without interrupting colleagues, to letting someone play a game, movie, or music without disturbing their significant others. The lack of headphones means it's possible to hear other sounds in the room clearly. The technology uses a 3D sensing module and locates and tracks the ear position, sending audio via ultrasonic waves to create sound pockets by the user's ears. Sound can be heard in stereo or a spatial 3D mode that creates 360-degree sound around the listener, the company said. The demo includes nature video clips of swans on a lake, bees buzzing, and a babbling brook. You got to have a babbling brook.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You just fall asleep to that. That actually, that sounds kind of cool. Where the listener feels completely transported into the scene. And CEO Christoph Ramstein finds it hard to put the concept into words. The brain doesn't understand what it doesn't know, he said. In a Novito demonstration conducted via Zoom from Tel Aviv, Soundbeamer product manager Ayana Wallwater was unable to hear the sound of gunshots on a gaming demo. That's the point. But she does get to enjoy the reactions of people trying the software for the first time. Most people just say, wow, I really don't believe it, she said. You don't believe it because it sounds like a speaker, but no one else can hear it. It's supporting you, and you're in the middle of everything. It's happening around you. By changing a setting, the sound can follow the listener around when they move their head. It's also possible to move out of the beam's path and hear nothing at all, which creates a surreal experience. You don't need to tell the device where you are. It's not streaming to one exact place. It follows you wherever you go. So it's personally for you, follows you, plays what you want inside your head. This is what we dream of, she said. So that's coming to you around Christmas 2021.
So you don't have to be high to hear Jerry Garcia in your head.
No, it's not an acid flashback. And it actually reminds me of the military is at, like, they say they're working on a device, or maybe they already have the device to beam like thoughts into people's heads.
What?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to get that article ready for comes out.
Yeah, I think I talked about it briefly on one of the shows, but I'll have to find the more details on it. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. And there's actually a book called The Sign that talked about that kind of technology, and they like made this priest think he was hearing voices from God and like totally manipulated him, and it was pretty interesting. But it was this like military special op group that was just kind of like trying to engineer this crazy, I don't want to
maybe they could beam it into a certain faction of Americans that didn't accept the results of the recent election.
Right. Well, that's kind of the scary thing, though, is like, if you can start beaming sounds into people's heads.
Did we just Mandela effect the whole election?
You know, because, I mean, who knows what that could be used for, especially, you know, I mean, you could. If people don't know where it's coming from, and if you're beaming like a sound, you know, even if it's just this this tech that this company's coming out with, I don't know if you'd be able to, because it says it'll follow you wherever you go. There's mm-hmm. no exact path. So if you tapped into somebody's brain with this and they're just walking around and you're talking to them like, this is God, go to 7-Eleven and buy a coffee. You know, they're just like, yes, God. Yeah.
Leave a Snickers bar on your neighbor's in your neighbor's mailbox.
Take out all the money in your bank account and put it in this one. Oh, man. So we'll see where that goes. But I do want to hear it, though. I do. Like, it sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And then the Babbling Brook thing, yeah, for sleeping. Because then you wouldn't. It would just be, like, in your mind. It,
rather than those, like, stupid little sound devices. Because mm-hmm. you know, those never really sound right. It sounds like a thing in my room that's playing a Babbling Brook.
Oh, yeah, Whereas, yeah. Like, I have one of those.
Sleeping next to a stream.
Exactly. It's like you hear. You know where it's coming from. It's like this little, you know. But yeah, that's there we go. So we'll look forward to that. So now let's see, should we stick to Earth or go to the past?
Let's go to the past.
Let's go to the past. All right. So there is either I have two things. Actually, I could do both. They're pretty short. So we have one about ancient technology that could exist in the future, or in the present, I should say, and then present technology that can decipher ancient languages.
All right. Okay, okay.
So here we go. All right, the first one is, this is from sciencealert.com. An ancient Mayan city had a surprisingly effective water filtration system. And starts off saying several ancient civilizations, including the Greeks, Egyptians, and Romans, filtered their water. Sanskrit writings dating back to 2000 BCE also mention water treatment methods. Now, archaeologists have discovered the Maya of Central America did too, and their water filtration system was incredibly effective. In a reservoir in what was once the major Maya city of Tikal, also a really good Method Man song, Tikal, the ruins of which crumble in a rainforest in present-day Guatemala, archaeologists have found zeolite and quartz, minerals that are not local to the area and which are both effective at helping remove contaminants such as microbes, heavy metals, and nitrogen compounds from the water. So effective, in fact, that they are both used in water filtration systems today. And what's interesting is this system would still be effective today, and the Maya discovered it more than 2,000 years ago, said anthropologist Kenneth Barnett Tankersley of the University of Cincinnati. And it goes on to say, zeolite is a natural crystalline compound of silicon and aluminum linked via shared oxygen atoms to form an open crystal lattice. It has excellent absorption and ion exchange properties, which makes it very effective at filtering water. And it says that this is the first recorded use of zeolite, which was from 2,000 years ago, the Mayans. We didn't start doing it till the 20th century.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were onto something 2,000 years ago.
Every time you talk about the Mayans, though, they sound way ahead of the game.
Oh, yeah. They were. Totally. And I've seen some of these aqueducts, too, and some of the ruins there. And it's interesting, too, because they obviously had knowledge of it. I don't know if it was through experimentation or seeing it in the natural way that the zeolite, affected water. But they took this. So these archaeologists found these different reservoirs, and they found the one that the Mayas would drink from, which was the Corriental Reservoir. And then, so near there, there was no zeolite or quartz, but they found an area, like a quarry or something, that had the zeolite and the quartz, but which actually was about 18 miles northeast of Tikal. And it was from volcanic rock, forms an aquifer known as produces exceptionally clear water. So they actually brought the zeolite and the quartz, 18 miles from there to Tikal to purposely filtrate their water. So they had some kind of knowledge of that this would work, and then they used different kind of reeds and palm fiber matting and other perishable porous material positioned just upstream or within the reservoir ingresses. And that was the way that they would use it to filter out the water and make it clean.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? The Mayans never cease to impress. And then the other one is, this is from nextweb.com, says new MIT algorithm automatically deciphers lost languages.
Okay.
And it says a new AI system can automatically decipher a lost language that's no longer understood without knowing its relationship to other languages. Researchers at MIT CSAIL developed the algorithm in response to the rapid disappearance of human languages. Most of the languages that have existed are no longer spoken, and at least half of those remaining are predicted to vanish in the next 100 years. The new system could help recover them. More importantly, it could preserve our understanding of the cultures and wisdom of their speakers. The algorithm works by harnessing key principles from historical linguistics, such as the predictable ways in which languages use sound substitutions. The researchers give the example of a word with a P in a parent language possibly changing it to a B in its descendant, but probably not to a K due to the difference in pronunciation. These kinds of patterns are then turned into computational constraints. This allows the model to segment words from an ancient language and map them to a related language. The algorithm can also identify different language families. For example, their methods suggested that Iberian is not related to Basque, which is supporting recent scholarship. And
that's interesting because isn't what Basque in the Iberian Peninsula, it's like a similar region.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that there would be some sort of crossover.
Right. But we'll find out. I guess there's, I'll have to dig more into that. But I know that Basque is a very fascinating culture and area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen those Basque priests.
They were
these huge hooded.
I don't know much about it other than it's not Spanish, not French. It was their own little.
It's a very
sort of
strange
subculture.
Esoteric mystical kind of culture and place, and they kind of have their own history and belief system, and so maybe they're descendant from Atlantis.
That's a whole nother episode.
We'll find out what language they are, but that's pretty cool, though. I mean, that this algorithm can decipher ancient languages. So who knows, what this could discover? I mean, how many different, Sanskrit writings or whatever else that we never knew what it said? We might figure it out. We might, maybe they have the cure for COVID in there.
Hopefully.
Oh man! All right. So let's see. I think we are. Well, I still have some on Earth stuff. So we got on Earth tech. We got some time stories, and we have different planets and also universes. Oh, and alien octopuses.
I love a good alien octopus story.
All right, let's go with the alien octopuses. And this is from BigThink.com. It says, octopus-like creatures inhabit Jupiter's moon, claims space scientist. space scientist.
Yeah.
And it says, a top British space scientist, Professor Monica Grady, gave all cosmic explorers a big dose of such hope of alien, alien findings, she is certain there is some form of life on Jupiter's moon Europa. This life would not look human, but more like an octopus, and is likely residing in the cold waters under the moon's sheets of ice. Gradia, professor of planetary and space science and chancellor at Liverpool Hope University, thinks there's a great likelihood of undiscovered life somewhere in our galaxy. She also supposes that the deeper caves and cavernous spaces of Mars could be harboring some subterranean creatures, likely bacteria, there to escape the solar radiation. They could be getting water from the ice buried deep down. When it comes to the prospects of life beyond Earth, it's almost a racing certainty that there's life beneath the ice on Europa, she said. She thinks these life forms on Europa, 390 million miles from Earth, could be higher in sophistication than the Martian bacteria, possibly having the intelligence of an octopus. An octopus, they're
pretty smart.
They're very smart. Says, where would the creatures live on the moon of Jupiter? Somewhere below the very thick layer of ice, which goes 15 miles deep in some places.
Huh.
It's possible there's liquid water beneath all that ice, keeping whatever lies inside protected against radiation and the impact of asteroids and similar smashing bodies. The likelihood of life on Europa is bolstered by the possible hydrothermal vents on its ocean floor. Such vents are cradles of life on Earth.
But what's that, the water bear, the tardigrade or whatever,
The little water bear, The little microscopic.
You think that, there's got to be something like that?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
I would think. I mean, they can survive anything. They survive the vacuum of space, and they've survived for, I think they live for like thousands of years or something crazy.
So maybe a couple hopped on a satellite somewhere and ended up.
But this is, it's weird because I saw this kind of B-movie, sci-fi B-movie a while back called Europa.
Okay.
And it was about, in the future, we, start to travel out, but we go to Europa to see if we can, bring the water back to Earth because there's like a water shortage or something. And there was like this octopus thing that was like the big alien in the end of fighting. There was like the octopus thing that existed under the ice. So I'm wondering, did this space scientist watch that movie? Which came first, the movie or the space scientist?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Or did someone see the movie and then write the article? Like, oh, this sounds plausible.
Right, right. I mean, her theory is recent, though. It says that it was earlier this year in February of 2020 that she was saying this. And I know that movie was at least a couple years old, like 3 or 4. So we'll see if there are space alien octopi. And I got many more stories in this weird science episode of Think Theory Radio, but we got to take a break, and we'll be back with more Think Theory Radio.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today is another special edition of our favorite things. That's right, Weird Science and Tales to Astonish. And just got through telling you about alien octopi and sound beaming into your brain.
The Mayans being way ahead of the water filtration game.
Yes, they were the Brita of 2,000 years ago. Who knew? Who knew? And so I still have many, many more to go.
You were talking about time travel.
Here we go.
Or just time travel or time in general.
I have two stories in the realm of time.
Ooh.
Time and space. So we have time travel and time crystals.
What's a time crystal? Let's learn about that.
Yeah, because time travel's fun. Yeah. We know where we're going.
We know that. Yeah.
Time crystals is very weird and also very sciencey, for lack of a better word.
Very sciencey.
And this is from sciencealert.com. For the first time, physicists have controlled the interaction of time crystals. The existence of time crystals, a particularly fascinating state of matter, was only confirmed a few short years ago, but physicists have already made a pretty major breakthrough. They have induced and observed an interaction between two time crystals. In a helium-3 superfluid, two time crystals exchanged quasi-particles without disrupting their coherence, an achievement that, the researchers say, opens up possibilities for emerging fields such as quantum information processing, where coherence is of vital importance. Controlling the interaction of two time crystals is a major achievement. Before this, nobody had observed two time crystals in the same system, let alone seen them interact, said physicist and lead author Semuli Atti of Lancaster University in the UK. Controlled interactions are the number one item on the wish list of anyone looking to harness a time crystal for practical applications, such as quantum information processing. Right?
Okay.
You got that, Paul?
No. I did not know I was going to be tested on this.
Are you taking notes?
Oh, hold on. Let me get my pen. I was that guy. I was that guy in class. Can I borrow a pen?
Oh, don't worry. I was the guy that wasn't in class. Yeah. So, right.
So I'm wearing my pajamas, hair unkempt,
right.
Rolled out of bed. What? I didn't know today was the quiz.
Right. Time crystals. What? It says that time crystals are pretty fascinating. They look just like normal crystals, but they sport an additional peculiar property. In regular crystals, the atoms are arranged in a fixed three-dimensional grid structure, like the atomic lattice of a diamond or quartz crystal. These repeating lattices can differ in configuration, but they don't move around very much. They only repeat spatially. In time crystals, the atoms behave a bit differently. They oscillate, spinning first in one direction and then the other. These oscillations, referred to as ticking, are locked to a regular and particular frequency. So where the structure of regular crystals repeats in space, in time crystals, it repeats in space and time.
Whoa. Okay. I think I get it. Yeah. I don't, but I think I
right.
get it.
So basically, let's get to the main point of this. It says, our results demonstrate that time crystals obey the general dynamics of quantum mechanics and offer a basis to further investigate the fundamental properties of these phases, opening pathways for possible applications in developing fields such as quantum information processing, the researcher wrote in the paper. Long-lived coherent quantum systems with tunable interactions, such as the robust time crystal studied here, provide a platform for building novel quantum devices based on spin-coherent phenomena. I did not understand that paragraph. So if there is any quantum physicists that want to call in the show and explain that part to us, let us know. But basically, it's for quantum computing.
Okay.
That's where this is going to head. It's a breakthrough in quantum computing and any kind of quantum information devices, so, which is where we're headed. We're headed to these. Oh, and it also said that it can be used for, like, atomic clocks.
Okay.
So you know how, like, the whole world, we have
set to, like, 6 clocks or something like that?
Yeah, and it's all these, you know, based on the cesium atom. And so I guess these time crystals will make it even more accurate or something.
Okay.
So I just like the name time crystals.
Yeah.
It sounds like something out of Doctor Who.
Well, it's like I think in Rick and Morty they use that.
Do they?
Not that I should base my knowledge.
Actually, I just saw the episode the other day. They had was it time crystals or death crystals?
Death
I think.
Crystals. Oh, was that the one where he could see how he was going to die?
Yeah.
Death crystals. Yep.
He put one in.
So
his
you can
head.
Change like outcomes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great episode. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Time crystals. All right. So the other one
is time travel,
which everyone wants to do.
Can you still time travel in these COVID-like conditions?
What?
Or is it strongly discouraged?
Well, you know, what's interesting is there actually is a part about that in this article
here. Okay.
And
they never talk about that in the time travel movies. Is what are you going to bring back? You know, like.
Right.
I went back to the bubonic plague era, and I brought it back.
So, yeah, there's a lot of... maybe that's how syphilis appeared in the modern times. Somebody went back to the Dark Ages and brought it back.
Brought it back. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Well, you know, was it Biff in
Back to the Future.
Well, he took the sports almanac, remember? And then
Yeah.
Made a ton of money.
Someone brings back like a petri dish of various diseases.
So basically, the problem is with time travel that everyone's worried about you know, this is why you can't just time travel, Paul, is because of the effect on the future or the effect on the present.
In this house, we obey the laws of physics.
Right. And, you know, so you can't go back and mess with time, right? Because it'll mess up the present.
Sure.
Well, not according to a new peer-reviewed paper. And this is from Popular Mechanics. A senior honors undergraduate says he has mathematically proven the physical feasibility of a specific kind of time travel. And the paper appears in Classical and Quantum Gravity. Says University of Queensland student Jermaine Tobar, who the university's press release called prodigious, worked with UQ physics professor Fabio Costa on this paper. In reversible, this is the name of the paper, reversible dynamics with closed time-like curves and freedom of choice. Tobar and Costa said they found a middle ground in the mathematics that solves a major logical paradox in one model of time travel. Let's dig in. The math itself is complex, but it boils down to something fairly simple. Time travel discussion focuses on closed time-like curves, or CTCs, something Albert Einstein first posited. And Tobar and Costa say that as long as just two pieces of an entire scenario within a CTC are still in casual order when you leave, the rest is subject to local free will. Our results show that CTCs are not only compatible with determinism and with the local free choice of operations, but also with a rich and diverse range of scenarios and dynamical processes, their paper concludes. And then it's...
I'm trying to wrap my head around that. So what is he saying? That, like, even if you go back and change one big thing...
It's... Well, here you go.
Okay, here we go.
Say you traveled in time, and this is Costa explaining this. In an attempt to stop COVID-19's patient zero from being exposed to the virus, however, if you stopped that individual from becoming infected, that would eliminate the motivation for you to go back and stop the pandemic in the first place. This is a paradox, an inconsistency that often leads people to think that time travel cannot occur in our universe. Logically, it's hard to accept because that would affect our freedom to make any arbitrary action. It would mean you can time travel, but you cannot do anything that would cause a paradox to occur. Now, in their new theory, in the coronavirus patient zero example, you might try and stop patient zero from becoming infected. But in doing so, you would catch the virus and become patient zero, mm-hmm. or someone else would. No matter what you did, the salient events would just recalibrate around you. Try as you might to create a paradox, the events will always adjust themselves to avoid any inconsistency. And then it goes on to say, well, that sounds frustrating for the person trying to prevent a pandemic or kill Hitler.
Yeah.
For mathematicians, it helps to smooth a fundamental speed bump in the way we think about time. It also fits with recent quantum findings from Los Alamos, for example, and the way random walk mathematics behave in one and two dimensions. At the very least, this research suggests that anyone eventually designing a way to meaningfully travel in time could do so and experiment without underlying fear of ruining the world. At least not right away. There you go.
Okay.
Boom. So it's all good. We can travel in time, man, do what we want.
I still would use it for selfish purposes, though. You know, put a little money on one stock that you know is going to do well by the time you get back.
Yeah. Or,
you know, that sports score. I mean, I would totally be Biff from Back to the Future Part 2.
It would be hard not to, though. You know, if you had much information about the future that you knew you could make money. You know what I mean? All the different, you know, like the stock market crashes and all these different, you know, the housing crisis. Like, you would know all this stuff in advance and...
Kind of like certain committees. And not going to say it. Not going to get sued.
No. It's also, you ever heard of John Titor?
No.
Or Titor or whatever?
No.
So there was this. This was back in the 90s, like kind of when the internet was in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
And a man claiming to be a time traveler named John Titor came, you know, he was get on all these message boards and he would say that he was from the future and he came back to stop, you know, whatever kind of world wars and...
Okay, either you told me about this guy or I have heard about this guy before.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty kind of well known, but I might have talked about it. But it's interesting if you look it up. There's actually some, he gave like descriptions of his device and all this information. And like, it was a major thing for years, like people trying to track down who he really was and if he really, well, you know, obviously.
See, I wouldn't advertise it if I was that guy. I would be kind of casual, like maybe like The Simpsons about mm-hmm. it, where it's like, hey, he got that right, you know, but it's like,
right.
You'd have to find this pattern in me where it's like, like, wow, you know, he's gotten like 14 or 15 things right over the last 5 years.
Right.
You know, is this guy, you know.
Well, that's how you know QAnon is not a time traveler, because they got nothing right.
Yeah. Big zero on that scoreboard. Right.
Who was a better psychic, QAnon or Miss Cleo?
Miss Cleo.
Right.
I don't know. Did QAnon make any money off of their scam?
I'm sure they probably did.
Okay. Well,
come on. There's a lot of gullible people out there, right?
I know. They're funding a recount right now.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's see. What else do we have? We have a couple articles dealing with AI. Okay. So there is material found by scientists which could merge AI with a human brain, or a new theory about consciousness that could give AI and robots feelings.
Oh, weird. Okay.
So I don't know which one, I don't know which one's weirder or which one you want to do first.
Oh, let's do the feelings. Robots and feelings.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is from futurism.com. It says, new research claims that consciousness itself is an energy field. And it says, an unusual new idea in neuroscience suggests that our consciousness is derived from a field of electromagnetic waves given off by neurons as they fire. The idea is that these waves of electrical activity get sent out by neurons and, as they propagate across swaths of the brain, orchestrate our entire conscious experience. The research, published last month in the journal Neuroscience of Consciousness, offers more theory than tangible evidence, but the author says it could pave the way for robots that genuinely think and feel. The author is John Joe McFadden, a molecular geneticist and director of quantum biology at the University of Surrey, who points to flaws in other models of consciousness as the reason that we don't have sentient artificial intelligence or robots capable of achieving consciousness. By recreating these electrical waves in machinery, McFadden suggests engineers might be able to pull it off. McFadden's hypothesis veers away from most neuroscientists, who generally see consciousness as a narrative that our brain constructs out of our senses, perceptions, and actions. Instead, McFadden returns to a more empirical version of dualism, the idea that consciousness stems from something other than our brain matter, in this case, energy. How brain matter becomes aware and manages to think is a mystery that has been pondered by philosophers, theologians, mystics, and ordinary people for millennia, McFadden said in a press release. I believe this mystery has now been solved, and that consciousness is the experience of nerves plugging into the brain's self-generating electromagnetic field to drive what we call free will and our voluntary actions, he added. Boom. So, seems like there's a lot of work to go on that one before we can give the, before we have datas running around with feelings.
Yeah.
But this one is a little closer in time to happening. And this is from Independent. Material found by scientists could merge AI with human brain. Scientists have discovered a groundbreaking biosynthetic material that they claim can be used to merge artificial intelligence with the human brain. The breakthrough, presented today at the American Chemical Society Fall 2020 Virtual Expo, is a major step towards integrating electronics with the body to create part human, part robotic cyborg beings. Connecting electronics to human tissue has been a major challenge due to traditional materials like gold, silicon, and steel causing scarring when implanted. Scars not only cause damage, but also interrupt electrical signals flowing between computers and muscle or brain tissue. The researchers from the University of Delaware were able to overcome this after various types of polymers. We got the idea for this project because we were trying to interface rigid, organic micro electrodes with the brain. But brains are made out of organic, salty, live materials, said Dr. David Martin, who led the study. It wasn't working well, so we thought there must be a better way. We started looking at organic electronic materials like conjugated polymers that were being used in non-biological devices. We found a chemically stable example that was sold commercially as an anti-static coating for electronic displays. The polymer, known as PDOT, has exactly the properties needed to interface electronic hardware with human tissue without causing scarring, while also dramatically improving the performance of medical implants. The versatile PDOT polymer was also recently discovered to be capable of transforming standard house bricks into energy storage units due to its ability to penetrate porous materials and conduct electricity. The latest research used a PDOT film with an antibody that stimulates blood vessel growth after injury and could be used to detect early stages of tumor growth in the body. PDOT polymers could also be used to help sense or treat brain or nervous system disorders, while versions could theoretically attach peptides, antibodies, and DNA. Name your favorite biomolecule, and you can, in principle, make a PDOT film that has whatever biofunctional group you might be interested in, Dr. Martin said. The researchers made a polymer with dopamine, which plays a role in addictive behaviors. Several companies and research institutions are already working on technology to connect brains with computers, with Elon Musk's Neuralink perhaps the closest to achieving a commercial product. The startup plans to reveal more details about its brain chips later this month, which could one day provide full bandwidth data streaming to the brain through a USB-C cable.
Huh.
There you go.
Run like a diagnostics on yourself.
Man, I'm telling you, we're getting so close to cyborg world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, we got music piping in our eardrums already and in our brains.
Connecting with AI. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have it plugged in. There's a show called Upload on Prime, Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And it's kind of like about, they create this chip that you can put in your brain and you basically have the internet and everything in your eyes. And then it gets really crazy. And like people are, they show you from inside the eyes and you see all these different little windows that they're looking at. And there's like a million people talking and they're posting online.
You told me about this. Yep.
It's pretty wild. So we'll see what happens with that. But we got to take a break and we'll be back with more Think Theory Radio and Weird Science right after this.
You're listening to WCPT 820, because facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're doing another episode of the fun and fantastic and crazy.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. Tales to astonish. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Starter.
I'm going to have to get those guys on the show so they can wrap that live. And so I have three stories left and 10 minutes. Can we do it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think we can do it. So I got two stories about two different very strange planets and then a strange theory that another universe existed before ours.
Okay.
So should we do the, should I go
the
planets?
Universe. Let's go.
Universe first?
Well, no, planets first and then universe. I think that's the logical.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll stay in our universe.
There you go.
And then we'll go,
to the other universe.
Yeah. There we go.
And then maybe, hopefully back to you.
Hopefully. You never know with this show sometimes.
You never know. I mean, we've already time traveled.
Yeah.
All right, so we got an Earth-sized rogue planet discovered in the Milky Way, and this is from phys.org, and it says, our galaxy may be teeming with rogue planets, gravitationally unbound to any star. An international team of scientists led by Polish astronomers has announced the discovery of the smallest Earth-sized free-floating planet found to date. Says over 4,000 extrasolar planets have been discovered so far. Although many of the known exoplanets do not resemble those in our solar system, they have one thing in common. They all orbit a star. However, theories of planet formation and evolution predict the existence of free-floating rogue planets, gravitationally unattached to any star. Indeed, a few years ago, Polish astronomers from OGLE team from the Astronomical Observatory of the University of Warsaw provided the first evidence for the existence of such planets in the Milky Way. Writing in Astrophysical Journal Letters, OGLE astronomers announced the discovery of the smallest rogue planet found so far. Exoplanets can only rarely be directly observed. Usually, astronomers find planets using observations of light from the planet's host star. For example, if a planet crosses in front of its parent star's disk, then the observed brightness of the star periodically drops by a small amount, causing so-called transits. Astronomers can measure the motion of the star caused by the planet. Free-floating planets emit virtually no radiation, and by definition, they do not orbit any host star. so they cannot be discovered using traditional methods of astrophysical detection. Nevertheless, rogue planets can be spotted using an astronomical phenomenon called gravitational microlensing. Microlensing results from Einstein's theory of general relativity. A massive object, the lens, may bend the light of a bright background object, the source. The lens gravity acts as a huge magnifying glass which bends and magnifies the light of distant stars. If a massive object, a star or solar planet, passes between any Earth-based observer and a distant source star, its gravity may deflect and focus light from the source. The observer will measure a short brightening of the source star, explains Dr. Pazemik Moraz, a postdoctoral scholar at the California Institute of Technology and lead author of the study. Chances of observing microlensing are extremely slim because three objects, source, lens, and observer, must be nearly perfectly aligned. If we observed only one source star, we would have to wait almost a million years to see the source being microlensed, he adds. This is why modern surveys hunting for gravitational microlensing events are monitoring hundreds of millions of stars in the Milky Way center, where the chances of microlensing are highest. The Ogle survey, led by Warsaw University astronomers, carries out one such experiment. Ogle is one of the largest and longest sky surveys, starting operations over 28 years ago. Currently, Ogle astronomers are using a 1.3-meter Warsaw telescope located at Las Campanas Observatory in Chile. Each clear night, they point their telescope to the central regions of the galaxy and observe hundreds of millions of stars, searching for those that which change their brightness. Gravitational microlensing does not depend on the lens's brightness, so it enables the study of faint or dark objects such as planets. Duration of microlensing events depends on the mass of the lensing object. The less massive the lens, the shorter the microlensing event. And the scientist announced the discovery of the shortest timescale microlensing event ever found, called Ogle 2016 BLG 1928, which has this timescale of just 42 minutes. When we first spotted this event, it was clear that it must have been caused by an extremely tiny object, says Dr. Radoslav Poleski from the Astronomical Observatory of the University of Warsaw, a co-author of the study. Indeed, models of the event indicate that the lens must have been less massive than Earth. It was probably a Mars mass object. Moreover, the lens is likely a rogue planet. If the lens were orbiting a star, we would detect its presence in the light curve of the event, adds Dr. Poleski. We can rule out the planet having a star within about 8 astronomical units. And the astronomical unit is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. The gravity of a free-floating planet may deflect and focus light from a distant star when passing closely in front of it. Due to the distorted image, the star temporarily seems much brighter. Rogue planets, man, just floating around. Reminds me of the I don't know if you ever heard of Planet X. And this theory, you know, like it's kind of goes into like the ancient alien stuff. And it's like this theory, there's a planet X or planet Nibiru. And it collided with Earth, you know, millions of years ago. And that's all like,
I'm confused. Is this like a Scientology thing or Ninja Turtles thing?
It's close. Okay. But it comes from some ancient scripts. And then people have interpreted in their own way and, you know, created kind of like an ancient alien kind of theory out of it.
Okay.
But it was supposed like this rogue planet that just kind of like drifts in and out of our solar system.
It has like no real orbit whatsoever. It's just kind of on its own course.
Well, and then it was before 2012, they were saying, and you know, the Mayan apocalypse, the Nibiru is going to come back and collide with Earth again.
But, so it does have an orbit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess that one's not, I can't remember if it's a rogue planet or if it's just has this crazy elliptical orbit that, you know, comes back every 5 million years or something. But from rogue planets, we go to hell planets.
Wait, is this a different universe or is this the same universe?
This is the same universe.
Okay.
Or at least same universe.
Okay.
Different galaxy? Maybe same galaxy. I don't know. Not our same solar system, though. I know that. This is from CBS. Says, scientists discover bizarre hell planet where it rains rocks and oceans are made of lava. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It says, if you thought living on Earth in 2020 was comparable to hell, planet K2-141b is here to prove you wrong. On the scorching hot planet, hundreds of light years away, oceans are made of molten lava. Winds reach supersonic speeds and rain is made of rocks. Man, you thought hurricanes are bad. Or... Don't go outside, honey. It's raining rocks. Scientists have referred to this bizarre, hellish exoplanet as one of the most extreme ever discovered. According to a new study published in Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, scientists from McGill University, York University, and the Indian Institute of Science Education have uncovered details of one of the newest lava planets, a world that so closely orbits its host star that much of it is composed of flowing lava oceans. Scientists found the atmosphere and weather cycle of K2-141b to be particularly bizarre. I think they could have came up, if it's a hell planet, you couldn't have called it like Hades or something like that, you know? K2-141b. The Earth-sized exoplanet appears to have a surface, ocean, and atmosphere all made of the same ingredients.
Okay.
Rocks.
Yeah.
The study is the first to make predictions about weather conditions on K2-141b that can be detected from hundreds of light years away with the next generation telescope, such as the James Webb Space Telescope. So there you go. It says the scorching hot part of the planet reaches temperatures of over 5,400 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yo!
It's hot enough to not only melt rocks, but also vaporize them, creating a thin, inhospitable atmosphere. It says our finding likely means that the atmosphere extends a little beyond the shore of the magma ocean. As opposed to the mag ocean. That's not something different. Making it easier to spot with space telescopes. The rest of the planet is cloaked in never-ending darkness, reaching frigid temperatures of negative 328 degrees Fahrenheit.
Whew. And that is the disparity of that?
With 5,400 degrees on one side and 300 or negative 3,400, whatever. Very, very hot and very, very cold. It sounds like a hell planet. Like I said, better name, though. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, people. Let's get creative. Now let's get down to the weirdest theory of the day, maybe.
It's the speed round.
Right. This is from Independent. Another universe existed before ours, and energy from it is coming out of black holes, says Nobel Prize winner. There was an earlier universe before the Big Bang, and evidence for its existence can still be observed in black holes, a Nobel Prize winning physicist said. Sir Roger Penrose made the claim after recently winning the award for breakthroughs in Einstein's general theory of relativity and proof of the existence of black holes. Sir Roger argues that the existence of unexplained spots of electromagnetic radiation in the sky, known as Hawking points, are remnants of a previous universe. It is part of the conformal cyclic cosmology theory of the universe, and it is suggested that these points are the final expulsion of energy called Hawking radiation, transferred from by black holes from the older universe. Black holes are a region of space where matter has collapsed on itself and has such high gravitational force that not even light can escape. Such an event may be occurring in the center of our galaxy. Reinhard Genzel and Andrea Ghez, who shared the Nobel Prize with Sir Roger, offered the most compelling evidence of a supermassive black hole in the middle of the Milky Way. And Sir Roger says, I claim there is observation of Hawking radiation. The Big Bang was not the beginning. There was something before the Big Bang, and that something is what we will have in our future.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
It's hard to go to bed after a Think Theory Radio weird science episode.
I hope everyone has some crazy dreams after these stories. And I want to thank everybody for listening and tune in every week right here on WCPT 820, 6 to 7 p.m. Also, Think Theory Radio is brought to you by The Silver Room. Check them out at thesilverroom.com. They are the intersection of art, culture, and music.